Chapter 16. Kingdom Road. Claudia. Instructions. The Noisemaker. The Monarchs. 1. Radar and I approached the fork, which was marked by a signpost that pointed to Kingdom Road on the right. The one marking the seafront road had come loose and pointed straight down, as if seafront resided underground. Radar gave a rusty bark, and I saw a man and a boy coming from the seafront direction. The man was hopping along on a crutch, his left foot wrapped in a dirty bandage and barely touching the ground every few steps. I wondered how far he'd be able to go on just on one good leg. The boy wasn't going to be much help. He was small and carrying their goods in a burlap sack, which he switched from hand to hand and sometimes dragged along the road. They stopped at the fork and watched me as I bore right past the signpost.
"Not that way, sir,"
the boy called.
"That's the way to the haunted city."
He was gray, but not as gray as the man with him. They might have been father and son, but it was impossible to see a resemblance because the man's face had begun to blur and his eyes to pull up. The man swatted him on the shoulder and would have gone sprawling if the boy hadn't steadied him.
"Leave him be. Leave him be,"
the man said. His voice was understandable, but muffled, as if his vocal cords had been wrapped in Kleenex. I thought that before long he'd be huzzing and buzzing like Dora. He shouted to me across the widening gap between the two roads, and it obviously hurt him. His grimace of pain made his dissolving features even more horrible, but he meant to have his say.
"Hello, old man. Which of them did your mother flip her skirts for to leave you fair of face?"
I had no idea what he was talking about, so I said nothing. Radar gave another feeble bark.
"Is that a dog, Pa? Or a tame wolf?"
The man's answer was another whack on the boy's shoulder. Then he sneered at me and made a hand gesture I understood perfectly. Some things don't change, apparently, no matter what world you're in. I was tempted to give him back the American version, but didn't. Dissing disabled people is crap behavior, even if the disabled person in question happens to be an asshole who whacks his son and casts aspersions on your mother.
"Walk well, whole man,"
he screamed in his muffled voice.
"May today be your last."
Always nice to meet pleasant people along the way, I thought, and walked on. Soon they were lost to sight. 2. I had Kingdom Road to myself, which gave me plenty of time to think and to wonder. The whole people, for example. What were they? Who were they? There was me, of course, but I thought if there was a whole people record book, I'd be in it with an asterisk by my name because I wasn't from Empus. At least this part of the world was called that. Woody had told me Hannah the Giant came from a place called Cratchy. It was nice to have Woody assure me, and he had, that I wouldn't start to turn gray and lose my face because, he said, whole people were immune to the gray. That had been this morning at breakfast, and he had refused to discuss it further because he said I had a long way to go and had to make a start. When I asked about Flight Killer, he only frowned and shook his head. He reiterated that his cousin Claudia could tell me more, and I had to be satisfied with that. Still, what the man on the crutch said was suggestive. Which of them did your mother flip her skirts for to leave you fair of face? I also wondered about the constantly gray skies. At least in the daytime, they were constantly gray, but at night, the clouds sometimes parted to allow the moonlight to shine through, which, in turn, seemed to activate the wolves. Not a single moon up there, but two, one chasing the other. And that made me wonder exactly where I was. I'd read enough science fiction to know about the idea of parallel worlds and multiple Earths, but I had an idea that when I passed through that place in the underground corridor where my mind and body seemed to separate, I might have arrived on a different plane of existence altogether. The possibility that I was on a planet in a galaxy far, far away made a degree of sense because of the two moons, but these weren't alien life forms. These were people. I thought about that book on Mr. Bowditch's bed table, the one with the funnel filling up with stars on the cover. What if I'd found my way into the world matrix it was supposedly about? I wish to God I'd put it in my pack along with food, radars, pills, and Polly's gun. The idea made me remember a movie I'd watched with my mom and dad when I was very young, The Neverending Story, it was called. Suppose Empus was like Fantasia in that movie, a world created out of collective imagination. Was that also a Jungian concept? How would I know, when I didn't even know if you pronounced the guy's name Jung or Jung? I wondered about those things, but what I kept coming back to was more practical. My dad. Did he know I was gone yet? He might still be ignorant of the fact, and ignorance, so they say, is bliss, but, like Woody, he might have had an intuition. Parents, I'd heard, were prone to them. He would have tried to call, and when I didn't pick up, he'd text. He might just assume I was too busy with school shit to respond, but that wouldn't hold for long, because he knew I was pretty responsible about hitting him back as soon as I could. I hated the idea of him worrying, but there wasn't anything I could do about it. I had made my decision. And besides, I have to say this if I'm going to tell the truth, I was glad to be here. I can't exactly say I was having fun, but yes, I was glad. I wanted answers to 1,000 questions. I wanted to see what was over every next rise and turn. I wanted to see what the boy had called the haunted city. Of course, I was scared of Hannah, of the night soldiers, and something or someone called Flight Killer. Most of all, of Gog Magog. But I was also exhilarated. And there was Radar. If I could give her a second chance, I meant to do it. Where I stopped to have lunch and rest for a while, the woods had closed in on both sides. I saw no wildlife, but there was plenty of shade. Want some chow raids? I hoped she did, because I hadn't gotten any of the pills into her that morning. I opened my pack, got out a can of sardines, opened them, and tilted the can toward her so she could get a good smell. She lifted her nose, but didn't get up. I could see more of that gummy stuff oozing out of her eyes. Come on, girl, you love these. She managed 3 or 4 steps down the slope of the cart, and then her rear legs gave out. She slid the rest of the way, slewing sideways and uttering a single high-pitched yelp of pain. She hit the hard pan on her side and lifted her head to look up at me, panting. The side of her face was smeared with dust. It hurt me to look at that. She tried to rise and couldn't. I stopped wondering about the whole people, the gray people, even my dad. All of that was lost. I brushed away the dirt, picked her up, and carried her onto the narrow grass verge between the road and the bulking masses of trees. I laid her there, stroked her head, then examined her back legs. Neither appeared to be broken, but she yipped and bared her teeth, not to bite, but in pain, when I touched them high up. They felt okay to me, but I was pretty sure an x-ray would have shown badly swollen and inflamed joints. She drank some water and ate a sardine or two, I think to please me. I had lost my own appetite, but made myself eat some of the fried rabbit Dora had given me, plus a couple of cookies. I had to feed the engine. When I picked Raids up, carefully, and put her back in the cart, I could hear the rattle of her respiration and feel every rib. Woody had said she was dying, and he was right. But I hadn't come all this way to find my dog dead in the back of Dora's cart. I grabbed the poles and moved on, not running. I knew that would blow me out, but at a fast walk. Hang in. Things might be better tomorrow, so hang in for me, girl. I heard the thump of her tail against the cart as she wagged it. 3. The clouds darkened as I pulled the cart along Kingdom Road, but there was no rain. That was good. I didn't mind getting wet, but getting soaked would make Radar's condition worse, and I didn't have much to cover her with. Also, pulling the cart might be difficult or even impossible if a hard rain turned the road to muck. Maybe 4 or 5 hours after Radar took her spill, I breasted a steep rise and stopped, partly to catch my breath, but mostly just to look. The land fell away before me, and for the first time, I could see the towers of the city clearly. In this dull light, those towers had a sullen olive cast like soapstone. A tall gray wall ran into the distance on both sides of the road, as far as I could see. I was still miles away, and it was impossible to tell how high it was, but I thought I could make out a monstrous gate in the center. If that's locked, I thought, I am truly fucked. The road between Woody's and where I stopped to rest and look had been curving, but it ran straight as a string to the city's gate. The woods began to draw back a few miles ahead, and I saw abandoned carts and what might have been hand plows in overgrown fields. I saw something else, too. A vehicle, or some sort of conveyance, coming in my direction. My eyes are good, but it was still miles away, and I couldn't make out what it was. I touched the butt of Mr. Bowditch's .45, not to confirm it was still there, but for comfort. Raids, you okay? I looked over my shoulder and saw her looking back at me from the front of the cart. That was good. I grabbed the poles and began to walk again. My hands were raising a pretty decent crop of blisters, and I would have given a lot for a pair of work gloves. Hell, even a pair of mittens. At least it was downhill for a while. A mile or two further along, the towers sinking behind the high city wall as the road descended, I stopped again. I could now see the person coming my way appeared to be riding an oversized tricycle. As we closed the distance between us, I saw the trike's rider was a woman and making good speed. She was wearing a black dress that billowed all around her, and it was impossible not to think again of the Wizard of Oz. Specifically, the black and white part at the beginning when Almira Gulch rides her bicycle under threatening Kansas skies to get Dorothy's dog and have him put to sleep for biting her. There was even a wooden carry basket on the back of the oncoming tricycle, although this one was much bigger than the Toto-sized one on the back of Miss Gulch's bike. "Don't worry, Raids," I said. "She's not taking you anywhere." When she got really close, I stopped and flexed my stinging hands. I was ready to be friendly in case this was who I thought it was, but I was also ready to defend myself and my dog if she turned out to be the Empisarian version of the Wicked Witch. The woman stopped by reversing the pedals of her tricycle and sending up a pretty good squelch of dust. Her dress quit billowing and fell limply against her body. She was wearing stout black leggings beneath the dress and big black boots. No need for any of Dora's replacement footwear for this lady. Her face was rosy with exercise and without the slightest trace of gray. If forced to guess, I would have said she was in her 40s or 50s, but it would be just a guess. Time is strange in Empis, and so is the aging process.
"You're Claudia, aren't you?" I said. "Wait, I have something to show you."
I opened my pack and took out the gold door knocker. She barely gave it a glance, only nodded and leaned over her handlebars. Her hands were dressed in leather gloves that I bitterly envied.
"I'm Claudia. Don't really need to see that. I dreamed you were coming."
She tapped her temple and barked a laugh.
"Dreams aren't trustworthy, but then this morning I saw the snab. Always a sign of rain or company."
Her voice wasn't just loud, it was utterly toneless, like the voice of an evil computer in an old sci-fi movie. She added something I hardly needed.
"I'm Death."
She turned her head. Her hair was done up in a high bun, and I could have seen her ear if she'd had one. She didn't. as with Leah's mouth and Woody's eyes, there was just a scar. 4. She hitched up her skirts, dismounted her trike, and strode to the cart for a look at Radar. On the way, she tapped the butt of the holstered 45.
Bowditch's. I remember it. And I remember her.
Radar lifted her head when Claudia stroked her, then scratched behind her ears in the way raids really liked. Claudia leaned close, apparently not the least bit afraid of being bitten, and sniffed. Radar licked her cheek. Claudia turned back to me.
She's sick as hell.
I nodded. There was no point denying it.
We'll keep her going, though. Will she eat?
I waggled my hand, meaning a little. Can you read lips? I patted my own, then pointed to hers.
Never learned too much,
she blared.
No one to practice on. We'll give her beef broth. She'll eat that, for God's sake. Bring her back a right smart. Do you want to put her in my basket? We might go faster.
I couldn't tell her that I was afraid of hurting Radar's sore back legs, so I just shook my head.
All right, but come along smart. 3 bells won't be long. End a day. There are goddamn wolves, you know.
She pushed her big trike, the seat had to be at least 5 feet off the ground, in a circle, then clambered up. She pedaled slowly, and the road was wide enough for me to walk beside her, so Radar and I didn't have to eat her dust.
4 miles,
she shouted in her toneless voice.
Pull lively, young man. I'd give you my gloves, but your hands are too big. I'll give you some good liniment for them when we're undercover. My own recipe, and it's damn good. They look mighty sore.
5. By the time we neared Claudia's, the day was darkening, and I was all but done in. 2 days of pulling Dora's cart made football practice seem like a breeze. Ahead of us, maybe a mile or two farther on, I could see the start of what might have been suburbs, although that word hardly fits. They were cottages like Dora's, but with broken roofs. They sat at a distance from one another at first, with little yards or garden plots, but shoulder to shoulder as they approached the city walls. There were chimneys, but no smoke came from any of them. Roads and streets began to sprout off here and there. Some kind of vehicle, I couldn't tell what, was stopped dead in the middle of the main road. At first, I thought it was a long wagon for hauling freight. When we got closer, I thought it might be a bus. I pointed to it.
Trolley,
Claudia boomed.
Been there for a long, long time. Pull on, young man. Strain your pooper.
That one I'd never heard before. I'd save it for Andy Chen, assuming I ever saw him again.
Almost there.
From across the distance between the city and where we were, there came the sound of 3 bells, spaced out and solemn. Dong, and dong, and dong. Claudia saw Radar perk up and turn toward the sound.
3 bells?
I nodded.
In the old days, that meant quit your labors and go home to supper. Now there's no labor and no one to do it, but the bells ring on. I can't hear 'em, but I can feel 'em in my teeth, especially when it storms.
Claudia's house stood on a weedy patch of ground in front of a scummy pond shrouded in bushes. The house was round and constructed of scavenged boards and pieces of tin. It looked mighty flimsy to me, making it hard not to think of the pigs and the wolf again. Woody's was a house of bricks, Claudia's was a house of sticks. If there was another royal relative who'd been living in a house of straw, I guessed he or she had been gobbled up long ago. When we reached it, I saw a number of dead wolves, 3 or 4 in front, and another, paws sticking up out of the weeds, to one side. I couldn't see that one very well, but those in front were pretty decayed, with rib cages poking out through the remains of their fur. Their eyes were gone, probably plucked out by hungry crows, and the sockets seemed to stare at me as we turned onto the beaten path leading up to the door. I was relieved to see that they weren't gigantic like the insect life, but they were plenty big, or had been when still alive. Death had put them on a strict diet, as I suppose is the case with all living things.
I shoot 'em when I can,
Claudia said, dismounting her trike.
Keeps the others away most of the time. When the smell wears thin, I shoot a few more of the fuckers.
For royalty, I thought, she's certainly got a foul mouth. I put down the cart poles, tapped her on the shoulder, and pulled Mr. Bowditch's revolver out of the holster. I raised my eyebrows in a question. I wasn't sure she'd understand, but she did. Her grin showed several missing teeth.
No, no, I don't have one of those. Crossbow.
She mimed raising one.
Made it myself. And there's something else even better. Adrian brought it when that one there wasn't much more than a pup.
She went up to the door and pushed it open with a brawny shoulder. I got Radar out of the cart and tried her on her feet. She was able to stand and walk, but at the stone step she paused and looked to me for help. I lifted her in. The house consisted of one large round room, and what I assumed was a smaller one, hidden by a blue velvet curtain, enlivened with threads of scarlet and gold. There was a stove, a tiny kitchen, and a work table scattered with tools. Also on the table were arrows in varying stages of completion and a wicker basket holding half a dozen finished ones. The tips glittered when she produced a long match and lit a couple of oil lamps. I picked one of the arrows up for a closer look at the tip. It was gold and sharp. When I touched the pad of my index finger to one, a bead of blood immediately welled.
Here, here, do you want to give yourself an affliction?
She grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me to a tin-lined sink. There was a hand pump hanging over it. Claudia gave the handle several hard plunges to get it going, then held my bleeding finger in the freezing water. It's just a little, I began, then gave up and let her do her thing. She finished at last and startled me by placing a kiss on the boo-boo.
Sit. Rest. We'll eat soon. Need to tend this dog of yours, then your mitts.
She put a kettle on the stove, and when it was warm but not steaming, she produced a basin from under the sink and filled it. To this she added some foul-smelling stuff from a crock on one of the shelves. Those shelves were full of goods, some in canisters, some in packages of what looked like cheesecloth tied with twine, most in glass jars. A crossbow hung on the wall to the right of the velvet curtain, and it looked like serious business. All in all, the place reminded me of a frontier home, and Claudia reminded me not of a royal relative, but of a frontier woman, rough and ready. She soaked a cloth in the stinking brew, wrung it out, then squatted over Radar, who looked suspicious. She began to press the cloth gently to those sore upper legs. While she did it, she made an odd crooning noise that I think was singing. It went up and down in pitch, while her speaking voice was just a constant loud monotone, almost like announcements from my high school's PA system. I thought Radar might try to scramble away or even bite her, but she didn't. She laid her head down on the rough boards and gave a sigh of contentment. Claudia got her hands under Radar's body.
Roll over, honey. I need to do the other one.
Radar didn't roll over, just sort of flopped. Claudia re-soaked the cloth and went to work on the other back leg. When she was finished, she tossed the cloth in the tin sink and got two more. She soaked them, wrung them out, and turned to me.
Hold 'em forth, young prince. That's what Woody called you in the dream I had.
Telling her I was just plain old Charlie wasn't going to work, so I just held them out. She wrapped them in the warm, wet cloths. The stink of her potion was unpleasant, but the relief was immediate. I couldn't tell her with words, but she saw it on my face.
Goddamn good, isn't it? My Nana showed me how to make it long ago, when that trolley still ran its route to Ulam, and there were folks to hear the bells. There's willow bark in it, But that's just the start. Just the start, my boy. Hold him on there while I get us some grubbit. You have to be hungry.
6. It was steak and green beans, with something like apple and peach cobbler for dessert. I'd certainly had my share of free food, grubbit, since coming to Empis, and Claudia just kept filling my plate. Radar had a dipper of beef broth with little globules of fat floating on top. She licked the bowl clean, licked her chops clean, and looked at Claudia for more.
"No, no, no,"
Claudia bellowed, bending to scratch behind Radar's ears in the way she liked.
"You'd cack it right back up, you sad old bitch, and what good would that do? But this won't hurt you."
There was a loaf of brown bread on the table. She plucked off a chunk with her strong, work-hardened fingers. She could have pulled that cart all day without raising a single blister. Then grabbed an arrow out of the basket. She impaled the bread, opened the door of her stove, and stuck the bread in. It came out an even darker brown and flaming. She blew it out like a birthday candle, finger-smeared it with butter from the pottery crock on the table, then held it out. Radar got to her feet, picked it off the arrow tip with her teeth, and took it into the corner. Her limp was better. I thought if Mr. Bowditch had had some of Claudia's liniment, he maybe could have skipped the OxyContin. Claudia pushed through the velvet curtain that concealed her boudoir and came back with a pad of paper and a pencil. She handed them to me. I looked at the stamped letters on the barrel of the pencil and felt a wave of unreality. What remained said, "Compliments of Sentry Lumb." There were only a few sheets left on the pad. I looked on the back and saw a faded price sticker. Staples, $1.99.
"Write when you have to, but just nod or shake your head if you don't. Save the fucking paper. Adrian brought it with the noisemaker on his last trip, and that's all that's left. Understand?"
I nodded.
"You came to refresh Aid's dog, didn't you?"
I nodded.
"Can you find your way to the sundial, young man?"
I wrote and held the pad out for her to see. Mr. Bowditch left his initials as a trail. Which, I thought, would be better than breadcrumbs, assuming rain hadn't washed them away, that was. She nodded and bowed her head in thought. In the light of the lamps, I could see a clear resemblance to her cousin Woody, although he was much older. She had a kind of stern beauty under the years of work and target practice on marauding wolves. Royalty in exile, I thought. She and Woody and Leah. Not the three little pigs, but the three little blue bloods. At last she looked up and said,
"Risky."
I nodded.
"Did Woody tell you how you must go and what you must do?"
I shrugged and wrote, "I have to be quiet." She made a huffing sound, as if that were no help at all.
"I can't keep calling you young man or young prince, although you do have a bit of the princely look about you. What's your name?"
I printed Charlie Reed in capital letters.
"Charlie?"
It was close enough. I nodded. She took a chunk of wood from the box by the stove, opened the stove door, rammed it in, slammed it shut. She resumed her seat, clasped her hands on the lap of her dress, and leaned forward over them. Her face was grave.
"You'll be too late to try your errand tomorrow, Charlie. So you'll need to overnight in a storage shed a bit of a way from the main gate. It has a red wagon with the wheels gone in front. Write it down."
I wrote storage shed, red wagon, without wheels.
"Good so far. You'll find it open, but there's a bolt on the inside. Run it if you don't want a wolf or three for company. Write it down."
Bolt door.
"Keep your place until you hear the morning bell. One ring. You'll find the city gate locked, but Leah's name will open it. Only hers. Leah of the Galleon. Write it down."
I wrote down Leah of the Galleon. She gestured for the pad to see what I had written, frowned, then gestured for the pencil. She scratched out G-A-L-L-E-O-N and changed it to capital G-A-L-L-I-E-N.
Did no one teach you to spell in that land of yours, boy?
I shrugged. Galleon or galleon, they sounded the same. And if the city was deserted, who was going to hear me and let me in anyway?
You be there and through the gate goddamned soon after the morning bell, because you have a goddamned long trek ahead of you.
She rubbed her forehead and looked at me, troubled.
If you see AIDS marks, all may be well. If you don't, leave before you become lost. The streets are a maze. You would still be wandering in that hellhole at nightfall.
I wrote, "She'll die if I can't refresh her." She read it and thrust the pad back at me.
Do you love her enough to die with her?
I shook my head. Claudia surprised me with a laugh that was almost musical. I thought it was one small remnant of what her voice had been like before she had been cursed to a life of silence.
Not a noble answer, but those who answer nobly have a way of dying young with their pants full of shit. Would you like some ale?
I shook my head. She got up, rummaged in what I supposed was her cold pantry, and came back with a white bottle. She thumbed out a cork with a hole in it, to let the brew breathe, I guessed, and took a long drink. This was followed by a ringing belch. She sat down again, now clasping the bottle in her lap.
If the marks are there, Charlie, Adrian's marks, follow them as brisk as you can, and quiet, always quiet. Pay no mind to voices you may hear, for they are the voices of the dead. And worse than the dead.
Worse than the dead? I didn't like the sound of that. And speaking of sound, there was the one the wooden wheels of Dora's cart were apt to make on paved streets. Maybe Radar could walk part of the way and I could carry her the rest?
You may see strange things. Changes in the shapes of things, but pay no attention. Eventually you will come to a square with a dry fountain in it.
I thought maybe I'd seen that fountain in the picture of Claudia and Leah that Woody had shown me.
Nearby is a huge yellow house with brown shutters. A passage runs through the center. That is the house of Hannah. One half of the house is where Hannah lives. The other half is the kitchen where Hannah takes her meals. Write it down.
I did, and then she took the pad. She drew a passage with a curved top. Above it, she drew a butterfly with outstretched wings. For a quick sketch, it was very good.
You must hide, Charlie. You and your dog. Will she be quiet?
I nodded.
Quiet no matter what?
I couldn't be sure of that, but I nodded again.
Wait for two bells. Write it down.
Two bells, I wrote.
You may see Hannah outside before two bells. You may not. But you will see her when she goes to the kitchen for her midday meal. That is when you must go through the passage, quick as ever you can. Write it down.
I didn't think I needed to. I wouldn't want to spend much time in Hannah's vicinity if she was as fearsome as I'd heard. But it was clear Claudia was very worried about me.
The sundial isn't much further along. You'll know because of the wide walkways. Put her on the sundial and run it backwards. Use your hands. Mind me, if you run it forwards, you'll kill her. And stay off it yourself. Write it down.
I did, but only to please her. I'd read Something Wicked This Way Comes and knew the danger of turning the sundial the wrong way. The one thing Radar didn't need was to get older.
Come back just as you went in. But beware of Hannah. Listen for her in the passage.
I raised my hands and shook my head. I don't understand. Claudia smiled grimly.
The great bitch always takes a nap after she eats, and she snores. You'll hear that, Charlie. It's like thunder.
I gave her two thumbs up.
Return quickly. It's far, and your time will be short. You don't need to be through the gate when the three bells ring, but you must be out of Lillimar soon after. Before dark.
I printed, "Night soldiers," on the pad and showed it to her. Claudia wetted her whistle with more ale. She looked grim.
Yes, they. Now cross that out.
I did, and showed her.
Good. The less said or written about those buggers, the better. Overnight in the shed, with the red wagon in front. Leave when you hear the morning bell. Come back here. Write it down.
I did.
We're finished,
Claudia said.
You should turn in now, for you must be tired and you have far to go tomorrow.
I nodded and wrote on the pad. I held it up with one hand and took one of hers in the other. Written large on the pad was, "Thank you."
"Na, na, na."
She squeezed my hand, then raised it to her cracked lips and kissed it.
"I loved Aid. Not as a woman loves a man, but as a sister loves a brother. I only hope I'm not sending you to your death. Or worse."
I smiled and gave her two thumbs up, trying to convey that I'd be fine. Which I was not, of course. 7. Before I could ask any more questions, I had many, the wolves started in. A lot of them, howling their heads off. I saw moonlight shining between two boards that had shrunk apart from each other, and there came a slam against the side of the house, so hard that it made the whole thing shiver. Radar barked and got to her feet, ears up. There was another slam, then a third, then two together. A bottle fell off one of Claudia's shelves, and I smelled pickled brine. I drew Mr. Bowditch's gun, thinking they'll huff and they'll puff till they beat her house down.
"Na, na, na,"
Claudia boomed. She looked almost amused.
"Follow me, Charlie, and see what Adrian brought."
She pushed back the velvet curtain and motioned me through. The big room was neat. Her bedroom wasn't. I wouldn't go so far as to call Claudia a slob about her private quarters, but... you know what, actually, I would go that far. Two quilts were rumpled and thrown back. Pants, shirts, and underwear that looked like cotton bloomers and chemises were scattered across the floor. She kicked garments out of her way as she led me to the far side of the room. I was less interested in what she meant to show me than I was in the wolf attack going on outside, and it was an attack, the battering at her flimsy wooden house now almost continuous. I was afraid that even if the clouds covered the moons, the assault wouldn't stop. They were cranked up and out for blood. She opened a door, revealing a closet-sized room featuring a composting toilet that had certainly come from my world.
"Shit house,"
she said,
"in case you need it in the night. Don't worry about waking me, I sleep like a goddamn stone."
I was sure of that, seeing as she was also as deaf as a stone, but I didn't think I'd be needing the bathroom if the wolves broke through. Not tonight or ever. It sounded to me like dozens of them were out there, trying to get in while Claudia gave me the house beautiful tour.
"Now attend you this," Claudia said.
She used the heel of her hand to slide back a panel next to the toilet. Inside was a car battery with AC Delco stamped on the side. Jumper clamps were attached to the terminals. The cables were attached to some sort of power converter. Another cable came out of the converter and connected to what looked like an ordinary light switch. Claudia was grinning broadly.
"Adrian brought it, and the fucking wolves hate it."
Cowards bring presents, I thought. She flipped the switch. The result was hammering blats of sound, like a bunch of car alarms magnified 50 or 100 times. I put my hands over my ears, afraid that if I didn't, I'd wind up as deaf as Claudia was. After 10 or 15 very long seconds, she flipped the switch down. I took my hands cautiously away from my ears. In the big room, radar was barking like mad, but the wolves had stopped.
6 speakers. Those fuckers will be running into the woods like their tails are on fire. How do you like it, Charlie? Was it loud enough for you?
I nodded and patted my ears. Nothing could withstand that sonic barrage for long.
I only wish I could hear it,
Claudia said.
But I feel it in my teeth. Huh?
I still had the pad and pencil. I wrote on it and held it up. What happens when the battery dies? She considered this, then smiled and patted my cheek with one hand.
I give you room and board. You bring me another. Fair trade, young prince. I say yes.
8. I slept by the stove, as I had at Dora's. There was no lying awake and pondering my situation that night. Claudia gave me a pile of towels for a pillow, and I was out as soon as my head landed on them. 2 seconds later, that's what it felt like, she was shaking me awake. She was wearing a long coat with butterflies appliqued on it. More of Dora's work.
What? I said. Let me sleep.
No, no, no.
She was deaf, but she knew perfectly well what I was saying.
Up, Charlie! Still far to go ahead of you. Time to be about your business. Besides, there's something I want to show you.
I tried to lie back down, but she pulled me to a sitting position again.
Your dog's waiting. I've been up an hour or more. Dog too. She's had another dose of liniment and feeling perky. Look and see.
Radar was standing beside her, wagging her tail. When she saw me looking, she nosed at my neck, then licked my cheek. I got up. My legs were sore, my arms and shoulders worse. I rotated them, then did a dozen forward shrugs, part of limbering up during preseason football practice.
Go on and do your necessary. I'll have something warm for you after.
I went into the little bathroom where she'd left me a basin of warm water and a knuckle of hard yellow soap. I urinated, then washed my face and hands. There was a small square of mirror on the wall, no bigger than a car's rearview mirror. It was scratched and tarnished, but when I bent, I could see myself. I straightened up, turned to go, then looked again, more closely. I thought my dark brown hair had lightened a bit. It did that in summer, after days in the sun, but there had been no sun here, only lowering clouds. Except at night, of course, when the clouds parted to let the moonlight shine through. I dismissed it as nothing but the light of a single oil lamp and the cloudy scrap of mirror. When I went back out, she handed me a thick slice of bread wrapped around a double helping of scrambled eggs. I wolfed it down. Not sure if that's a pun or not. She handed me my pack.
I put in water and cold tea. Paper and pencil, too, just in case. That cart you've been dragging stays here.
I shook my head and pantomimed picking up the poles.
No, no, no. You're done with that until you return with my three-wheeler.
I can't take your tricycle. She had turned away and didn't hear.
Come out, Charlie. Dawn breaks soon. You don't want to miss this.
I followed her to the door, hoping she wouldn't be opening it to a pack of ravening wolves. There were none, and in the direction of what the boy had called the haunted city, the clouds had broken, and I could see a scatter of stars. Sitting near Kingdom Road was Claudia's oversized trike. The big basket on the back had been lined with a soft white square of what looked like fleece, and I understood that was where Radar was supposed to ride. I realized the three-wheeler would be easier and faster than pulling the cart with Radar in it, but there was something else that was even better. Claudia bent and held the lamp down to the oversized front wheel.
Aid brought these tires, too. Rubber. I'd heard of it, but never seen it. Magic from your world, Charlie, and quiet magic.
That convinced me. No worries about hard wheels clattering on cobbles. I pointed to the trike. I pointed to myself. I patted my chest above my heart. I'll bring it back, Claudia. I promise.
You'll return it to me, young Prince Charlie, I've no doubt.
She patted me on the back, then gave my bottom an unselfconscious whack that reminded me of Coach Harkness sending me in to play defense or pinch hit.
Now look to the bright sky.
I did. As the stars paled, the sky over the city of Lillimar turned a beautiful peach shade. There may be such a color when days dawn in the tropics, but I'd never seen one exactly like it. Radar sat between us, head raised, scenting the air. Except for the gunk coming out of her eyes and how thin she was, I would have thought her perfectly okay. What are we looking for? Claudia didn't reply because she didn't see me speak. She was looking toward the city, where the towers and three tall spires rose, black against the brightening day. I didn't like the look of those glassy spires, even at a distance. Their configuration made them seem almost like faces that were looking at us. I told myself that was an illusion, no different than seeing a gasping mouth in the knothole of an old tree or a cloud that looked like a dragon, but it didn't work. Didn't come close to working. The idea, surely ridiculous, crept into my mind that the city itself was Gogmagog, sentient, watching, and evil. The idea of going any closer was frightening. The idea of using Leah's name to pass through its gate was terrifying. Mr. Bowditch did it and came back, I told myself. You can too. But I wondered. Then the bell rang out its one long, sonorous iron note. Dong. Radar got to her feet and took a step toward the sound.
First bell, Charlie?
I raised one finger and nodded. While the sound still lingered, something began to happen that was far more amazing than an oversized cockroach or a big red cricket. The sky over the crammed together hovels and cottages outside the city began to darken as if a shade were being rolled not down, but up. I grabbed Claudia's arm for a moment, afraid I was seeing some strange eclipse not of the sun or moon, but of the earth itself. Then, as the sound of the bell faded to nothing, the darkness broke apart in 10,000 cracks of daylight that pulsated and changed. I saw the colors, black and gold, white and orange, deepest royal purple. They were monarch butterflies, each one the size of a sparrow, but so delicate and ephemeral that the morning light shone through them as well as around them.
Hail, Empress!
Claudia cried, and raised both hands to the rising flood of life above us. That flood blocked the city skyline, blocked out the faces I thought I'd seen.
Hail the galleon! May they rule again and forever!
Loud as she was, I hardly heard. I was transfixed. Never in my life had I seen something so weirdly surreal and so beautiful. The butterflies darkened the sky as they flew above us, traveling to God knew where, and as I felt the wind of their wings, I finally accepted, wholly and completely, the reality of this other world, of Empis. I had come from a make-believe world. This was reality.